Next item on the agenda is Big Bridge Developers LLC 09-0797. Morning, Mr. McGinnis.
Good morning, sir. This is a Big Bridge Developers LLC requesting authorization to cross the southern branch of the Elizabeth River with a high-level fixed-span two-lane private concrete segmental toll bridge immediately south or upriver the existing closed Jordan Bridge, which links the city of Chesapeake with the city of Portsmouth. The new South Norfolk Jordan Bridge will provide 145 feet of vertical clearance above mean high water and 225 feet of horizontal clearance within the Federal Navigation Channel and contain two lanes of vehicular traffic and a pedestrian sidewalk separated by a concrete barrier. The project is protested by the Virginia Maritime Association and a ship agent and broker in the city of Norfolk. For those of you that aren't familiar with the Jordan Bridge, it is located on the southern branch of the Elizabeth River, this location here. Aerial photograph depicting the bridge, the existing bridge in this location. This is one of the application drawings that shows the approximate project boundaries of the proposed bridge. And you can see it falls just south of the existing structure or just upstream. This is a relatively recent aerial photograph prior to the bridge closing. There's still some traffic shown on the bridge in a few spots here. For the commission's sake, there's some other photographs that will show, but this center span here is no longer in place. It has been removed. The remaining portions of the existing bridge are still in place and are in the process of being removed by a demolition contractor. This is a photograph from back around mid-June, and you can see here that that center section is removed. This is the approximate location on the Chesapeake side of the river. The new bridge will leave the upland in this approximate location here. And this is on the Portsmouth side. This is a small tidal gut that goes up alongside the existing, this is Elm Avenue here, which leads out onto the existing bridge. The new bridge will come in, and actually some of the pier supports will actually be right along the edge of this wetland boundary through the creek here. And this is one of the application drawings that attempt to show that. These are the piers here shown in yellow. And they go right alongside this creek, little tidal gut that comes up in. A platform, a temporary construction platform, a solid-fill platform will have to be constructed in this location in order to drive piles to support the pier in this location. Those impacts, wetland impacts as well as the wetland impacts on these other piers were approved by the Portsmouth Wetland Board, I believe last month. And just some basic dimensions and facts about the proposed bridge. This is an artist rendering showing what the new bridge would look like. It is a little over 5,500 feet long and crosses from mean low water on each side of the river approximately 1,885 linear feet. The structure will be 51 feet, 8 inches wide, and again have those two traffic lanes with shoulders and then a pedestrian walkway, as was mentioned previously. The center span is proposed to be 365 feet wide, and that's from center line of Pier 20 to Pier 21, which will show up in a few slides, some more detailed drawings. There's a minimum span on beyond the center section there of 128 feet 6 inches, But within that center span, the proposed bridge would provide a 145-foot vertical and a 225-foot horizontal clearance within the existing navigation channel, which is what this drawing here is showing. The hatched line that's in here represents the existing Gordon Bridge. You can see the pier sections shown here, these circles and an oval-shaped areas here. Those are the piers for the new bridge. And this shows a fender system that would surround those central pier locations to protect the bridge and provide for that navigation channel, which they're showing here, the width of 225 feet. This is just a blow-up of that that same drawing. It shows roughly where those pilings would be placed to put in the fendering system. And again, the width at 225 foot. It's a cross-section. You can see here that, again, a 145-foot vertical clearance and a 225-foot horizontal clearance. And that clearance is dictated by the location of the fender piles, but also the point where you reach that 145-foot maximum clearance on the curvature of the bottom side of the bridge. These are just some details of the bridge footers for each of the piers. Not sure that this is something that's high interest, but it does provide some perspective of how many pilings at each one of these locations would need to be. This is one of the central pier locations, and I believe has 16 piles. As you move away from the channel, those footers become smaller and require less pilings. This slide is intended to show you other crossings, bridge crossings of the southern branch, starting in the north or on the downriver side with the Norfolk and Portsmouth Beltline Railroad, this location here, just downriver of the existing Jordan Bridge and the location of the proposed Jordan Bridge. The Beltline Railroad's horizontal clearance is 300 foot, so it is a wider horizontal clearance than what is being proposed at the Jordan, but its vertical clearance is 142 feet. It's 3 foot shorter than what's being proposed at the new Jordan Bridge. Below the Jordan Bridge, or to the south upriver, you have the Norfolk Southern Railroad, often referred to on maps as Norfolk and Western Railroad, the Norfolk Southern's predecessor. Again, a smaller horizontal clearance, 220 feet, and a significantly shorter vertical clearance of 135 feet. As you move upriver, just before you get to the Gilmerton Bridge, this is a military highway here. This is the mill dam turning basin here, where many of the vessels that do transit up the river, many of them are not able to go beyond Gilmerton Bridge and actually turn around in this turning basin here, which is important for one of the studies that was submitted into the record by Moffitt and Nickel that suggests that that rather than the height and the vertical and the horizontal clearance of the proposed Jordan Bridge, that it's actually the turning basin that will restrict the size of vessels that will be able to make calls on facilities along the river in this area in the future. I won't go into great detail, but again, the Gilmerton Bridge and an adjacent railroad bridge, Norfolk Southern Railroad Bridge, location here, and this is Interstate 64 bridge, often referred to as the high-rise bridge, crosses in this location here. This is the Beltline bridge that's it's currently existing. It's just downriver or to the north of the proposed Jordan Bridge site. This is a photograph of it in the closed position, and then a photograph of it in the open position. And this is what the previous Jordan Bridge is, a similar type of construction, as well as the Norfolk Southern Bridge, which is just to the south or upriver in this location here. It's a similar design as well, a lift span bridge. When I came to the podium, I brought a box with me. Inside the box are letters of support and letters of objection to the proposed project that were submitted to the United States Coast Guard. This is a summary that they had put together that we are just providing to you all to understand. And we've highlighted here that, you know, of the letters that were received, 1,014, 908 were considered to be in support of the project, and 75 were considered to not be in support. So the letters were provided to us in this box here, and we include them in the record of the commission. You're certainly welcome to take a look at them, but we've just chosen to summarize them in this matter here. I believe there are people in the audience that will choose to speak for and against the project here shortly. There's several issues here, and before I get into the staff recommendation, which I do have the slide that's up here, we did receive protest letters to the commission from T. Parker Host Incorporated, which is a company in Norfolk that is in the marine shipping business. With that letter, they did attach a position paper from the Virginia Maritime Association, which states essentially that they feel that a bridge with a higher vertical draft as well as a horizontal clearance would be more appropriate, considering that they believe the current bridge is designed to meet the standards of the 1920s, which is when most of the other railroad bridges, as well as the previous Jordan Bridge, were constructed for the types of vessels that were calling on facilities along the river at that time. They said that they prefer the Maritime Association says they prefer a minimum vertical clearance of 165 feet above mean high water and a minimum horizontal clearance of 300 foot. And they also mentioned expected opening of the new Panama Canal, which will just lead to larger vessels calling on on the Hampton Roads ports. With regard to that, I did mention in your package, I believe it's under Section 11, it was a navigation study was submitted to the Coast Guard by Moffitt and Nickel, an engineering firm in Norfolk. It was a study that looked at the existing bridges and what to expect of larger vessels in the future. That study ended up concluding that that the mill dam turning basin that I mentioned earlier is really the limiting factor because it limits the length of a vessel that can move beyond those areas, and typically vessels of lengths that are greater than what can be accommodated at the turning basin would be the types of vessels that would require the larger vertical and horizontal clearances for safe navigational passage upriver. So we certainly took that into consideration and provided a copy of that to you. I know it's quite lengthy, but the summary at the end, I think, is fairly concise and helpful in understanding the conditions on the river. Staff does have some questions with regard to the proposed height of the bridge and question why it could not be brought up to accommodate the interest that we've received from the Maritime Association about that. The applicant has explained to us that in making the deal with the City of Chesapeake to obtain the rights to take over that bridge and construct a replacement bridge, that they were required to provide pedestrian access for that bridge that must be ADA compliant, American Disabilities Act. which requires that the slope be no more than a 5% grade. And because of that, it does limit the height of the bridge because there's only so much real estate for the bridge to begin and end on. And in order to maintain the 5% grade, it does limit the height to the 145-foot vertical clearance that's proposed. Staff has brought up issues, question whether or not some type of shuttle service could be provided so that the bridge could be constructed at a steeper grade, but still also serve the purpose of allowing a pedestrian crossing of this location. Certainly aware that it's has been fairly popular with people that work at the Naval Shipyard on the Portsmouth side who commute by bike from the Chesapeake side of the river. The Virginia Institute of Marine Science indicates that the project will result in permanent loss of 1,000 square feet of subaqueous bottom as a result of the pile placement and temporary impacts associated with construction. Expected impacts include bottom disturbance with potential of releasing toxic from within the sediment into the waterway. As many of you all know, the southern branch of the Elizabeth River has many issues with sediment contamination. In fact, the location of the bridge, the Portsmouth side, is the Atlantic Wood Creosote site, which is a EPA Superfund site. So there certainly is concern that disturbance of the bottom sediments may release creosote or other contaminants into the water column. DEMS also documents that various anadromous fish, including alewife, American shad, hickory shad, and blueback herring, are found in the surrounding area, and they recommend that construction activities be avoided from February through June to reduce impacts to those species. DEMS stated that the time of year restriction would help to minimize impacts related to acoustical damage to fish in addition to disturbance of sediment, and that the acoustical damage would result from the pile driving activity and the propagation of those pressure and sound waves through the water. National Marine Fisheries Service also reviewed the project and has provided comments to the Coast Guard. They have not recommended a time of year restriction, but I think did agree that the use of a turbidity curtain around the piles as they're being driven would be best management practice. VIMS is, because they had brought up the issue of not just the impacts from disturbing the sediment, but also the acoustical damage to fish, staff feels that the time of year restriction is appropriate because it goes beyond just limiting the sediment that would get out that a turbidity curtain would help to control. We understand that the applicant is proposed to using a bubble curtain, essentially a temporary structure that would introduce bubbles into the area surrounding where the piles are being driven, and those bubbles theoretically would actually dampen sound and pressure waves that emanate from the piles as they're being driven. VIMS did take a look at this, provided comments to us, which were in an email dated August 20th. I think they're item 3A in your packets. Essentially, VIMS, after looking at information related to other projects in other states, as well as the Woodrow Wilson Bridge project up in Northern Virginia, the D.C. area, they still recommend that a time of year restriction would be most appropriate. At this point, staff is recommending the time of year restriction be included as a condition of the permit, but we do expect that the applicant will provide some arguments to you so that you all can make that final determination. As I mentioned before, the Portsmouth Wetland Board, in addition to the Chesapeake Wetland Board, approved impacts to wetlands within their jurisdictions. The Virginia Department of Environmental Quality indicated that a permit would not be required since the project qualifies for a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers nationwide permit. The Army Corps of Engineers determined the project should qualify for a nationwide permit 33 for wetland impacts, and the United States Coast Guard is the lead federal agency that is reviewing the project for its navigational impacts, and to date has not yet made a determination on the project. We anticipate that they will at some point in the near future. As I mentioned, the letters of support and objection that the Coast Guard did receive, we've obtained copies of, and they are provided for you all for the record as well. So now to get into our recommendations and our summary. There is general agreement there is an obvious need to replace this vital vehicular transportation link between the cities of Chesapeake and Portsmouth. A new Jordan Bridge will ease congestion on the other area bridges and tunnels over the southern branch of the river. Since there is no public money currently available to replace the structure, this private project offers a cost-effective and reasonable solution. Clearly, the potential public benefits of the project outweigh any potential adverse environmental impacts to State Bottom and the fisheries resources under VMRC's jurisdiction. Since the proposed South Norfolk Jordan Bridge will cross a federal navigation channel, and in this case, since the United States Coast Guard is the lead federal agency for this bridge project, we believe it is appropriate to defer the navigational issue to them. Accordingly, and with the understanding that the Coast Guard has ultimate jurisdiction over the navigational opening created by the proposed bridge, staff recommends approval of the project with the following special conditions. Number one, time of year restriction be imposed from February 15th to June 30th for any in-water construction activities which may disturb bottom sediments, such as pile driving or removal of piles from the previous structure. Two, all new piling installation and any old piling removal to be within turbidity curtains surrounded by oil containment booms to isolate and localize any potential contaminated materials which may become resuspended into the water column. Three, complete removal of the existing Jordan Bridge structure from state-owned subaqueous bottom within 1 year of permit issuance. In addition, staff recommends a one-time royalty in the amount of $194,796 for the proposed bridge's encroachment over 97,398 square feet of state-owned subaqueous bottom at a rate of $2 per square foot for this private commercial structure. If the Coast Guard makes a final determination that the bridge structure needs to be redesigned to increase the height or the width of the navigational opening of the federal channel, staff would request that the Commission authorize staff to amend the permit provided the bridge remains in the same location and that there is no additional encroachment over state-owned submerged land. Should a redesign result in a change in either the location of the bridge or an increase in the footprint of the structure over state-owned subaqueous bottom in the river, staff would bring the modification back to the Commission for reconsideration following the requisite public interest review for the new structure. And with that, I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions. I will tell the Commission that this project was processed by another staff member, and I'm filling in today, so I was involved in several meetings and cover the city of Portsmouth for us, so I'm familiar with the project. Hopefully should be able to answer anything that you may have.
Thank you for the briefing, Ben. Is there any questions by members of the commission? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben, thanks for the presentation. The impacts that you discussed to fisheries resources largely revolved around the VIMS assessment.
That's right.
Can you also summarize for us the assessment that was done by the Habitat Conservation Division of the Fisheries Service?
I could believe that Dave O'Brien from National Marine Fisheries is in the audience today. It might be more appropriate to have him. I don't think he was expecting to talk, but
he's on. Dave, you here? Can you come forward, please, to the podium? Answer Mr. Robbins' question, if you would, please. Were you sworn previously today?
No, sir, I was not.
Please raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you God.
I do.
You state your name for the record and who you represent.
I'm David O'Brien. I'm with NOAA Fisheries Service, Habitat Conservation Division. Commissioner Robbins, nice to see you.
We're considering impacts to the fisheries resources in the area that relate to the methods and some of the conditions that are being discussed. And, we heard in the staff assessment what BIMS had prepared, but obviously there are EFH designations that come under federal review. So I was wondering if you could comment or summarize your findings of that review.
There is EFH designated for the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. Based on the proposed impacts, the method of construction, I coordinated with Mr. Jim Cahoon, Bay Environmental, who is acting as the agent for the U.S. Coast Guard on this project, along with FIG Bridge Builders. And it was my determination that the potential effects to EFH would not be substantial. And in consideration of a time of year restriction to help protect anadromous fish, I coordinated with the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, specifically a gentleman by the name of Ernie Ostenbach, and it is his understanding that DGIF does not have enough survey data to make recommendations regarding time of year restrictions for activities in the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. So I have deferred to the state on this, and if that is their position, I typically will support their position on such matters, especially when they're the ones who are out conducting the surveys for anadromous species. So although there likely are the species that were listed by Ben utilizing the southern branch, to what extent we do not know. And I think given the mitigative measures that have been proposed, we were of the opinion that a time of year restriction to protect those species was not warranted.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. O'Brien.
Yes, sir.
Further members of the commission have questions of Mr. McGinnis. I'd like to follow up on that same line of questioning, if I could, Ben. I note that that you indicated that the applicant sought some clarification from BIMS after the time of year restriction was included in the staff recommendation. And very promptly, Molly Ruggiero, I presume is how you spell her last name, from BIMS, provided an overview or an analysis of the effectiveness of these turbidity curtains. I certainly am not condemning the staff nor BIMS for wanting a time of year restriction to protect marine resources. Certainly that's our charge. There's no doubt about that. But in the email from Ms. Ruggiero, it states that she basically compares this to the Woodrow Wilson Bridge construction, where there were some incidents up there. And I don't recall, was the Woodrow Wilson Bridge utilizing concrete pilings for construction or metal?
I believe they were using steel piles.
They were using steel piles. And she makes mention of that during the course of that, as far as acoustics are concerned, that steel piles are more likely to, of course, create an acoustic dynamic.
That's our understanding as well.
Correct. I read from the email that she said. She said, the project is most similar in terms of fish species to the Jordan Bridge as a project at the Woodrow Wilson Bridge project on the Potomac River. Monitoring results at this site indicate that fish were visibly affected at pressures as low as 6 pounds per square inch, and shed and herring kills were observed following pile driving. Following the installation of bubble curtains at the Woodrow Wilson Bridge project, there were no more anadromous fish kills, and monitoring showed that bubble curtains were extremely effective in reducing, if not eliminating, harmful pressure waves. Can you comment on that? Would you like BIMS to comment on that? Or?
Well, I mean, BIMS could if they like. I think from the staff perspective, if you continue to read the email, it does state that while that did appear to stop fish kills, that they're not able to determine what other impacts it may have had on the fish, non-lethal impacts. Potentially it could have prevented the fish from continuing with their spawning or so forth. So, you know, a time of year restriction, any time they're recommended, really is done in a manner that allows the area to be protected when there isn't enough information to be known otherwise. I think what you'll see here is that, you know, there's just not a lot of information, particularly in Virginia, and even more so with the use of these concrete piles. Everything seems to be, much of the information that is out there scientifically seems to be dealing with the steel piles, which certainly indicate they do have a larger pressure wave or that does come off of them. So it's more of staff just trying to be cautious, and we realize that steps could be taken. These bubble curtains may work fine, but we ultimately thought that would be something that you all should decide, as a commission, because frankly we just don't have the expertise, and we had to go off what VIMS did recommend to us.
And understood, and just so we have the rest of the story from Ms. Ruggiero, she indicates in the last paragraph, bridge projects in other states have used a variety of compromises ordered from most to least conservative, using bubble curtains and halt pile driving activities when species of interest are found within prescribed distance of the project, using bubble curtains and monitoring noise levels, using bubble curtains and halting pile driving activities when adverse effects on fish are observed, and simply using bubble curtains. So basically, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, she's opening the door to basically us making the determination.
I spoke with her yesterday just to get clarification on those comments, and what she said is she did still recommend the time of year restriction from a strictly environmental viewpoint, but those other comments were provided because she did realize the commission has to weigh other considerations, and that in doing so, that maybe some of those options should be considered by the commission as being appropriate. And certainly, we as a staff are open to whatever the commission is willing to allow for if you do.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Follow up? Thank you, Ben. Very good briefing. Is the app? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the applicant is here with a team of people. I think, as well as the City of Chesapeake representatives, and I believe that there are several people from the interested maritime community that are here as well that I expect would want to speak to you as well.
He'll be afforded that opportunity. Thank you for the briefing. It's the applicant here, represented, who will be speaking on behalf of. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
For brevity and for efficiency, do you have a number of people that will be speaking?
Yes, we do.
Can you ask all that will be speaking to rise so I can swear them in at one time? That way we can save some time. Is there anyone in here that's going to speak in support of this project? If you would, please rise. You solemnly swear the testimony that you'll provide today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you very much. Be seated, please. Your name, ma'am?
I'm Linda Figg, President and CEO of Figg Bridge Developers, 424 North Calhoun Street, Tallahassee, Florida.
Pleasure to have you here, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I'm going to find my presentation here. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come before you today to present a very important transportation project for the people of Hampton Roads. This is a private bridge that will serve the public good. It will not cost anything to the city or the state to accomplish. And in doing so, we'll create a bridge that focuses on protecting the environment and providing freedom for vessel traffic, both now and in the future, and vehicle traffic and pedestrians and bicycles at the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. So we want to share with you some details about this project and the important features that we put in this project to be environmentally sound and important for the community. A background on our company: we exclusively specialize in bridges for the past 30 years throughout the United States and internationally. Our customers have 311 awards. Predominantly, these are for environmental consciousness and doing good things for the environment in those projects. All of the companies that we have are focused on bridges, and we've accomplished bridges around the country, as you can see, from Boston, Vail, New York, and Maine. Our customers have received three presidential awards through the National Endowment for the Arts. There's only been five of these ever given. The two that you see to the right, the Neches Trace Parkway Arches and the Blue Ridge Parkway Viaduct in North Carolina, were both accomplished for the National Park Service and the Federal Highway Administration, all accomplished with techniques to protect and preserve the environment. Our customers have also been recognized by Roads and Bridges magazine, who came out with the top 25 bridges of all time, and in that identified six bridges that we had accomplished for our customers, including one that is in Virginia, the Smart Road Bridge in Blacksburg, Virginia, which goes over a pristine valley and was accomplished to create openness and preserve the environment. We've also accomplished in Virginia the I-295 Marina Enum Bridge, which is near Richmond over the James River, which opened in July of 1990. And most recently, we all know about the collapse that occurred in Minneapolis on the I-35W Bridge on August 1st of 2007, merely a 40-year-old bridge, which collapsed and caused the death of 13 people and over 100 people injured. This brought to light in this country the importance of our structurally deficient infrastructure, raised great concerns throughout the country. We were very pleased and proud to provide the new replacement structure, which would set a new standard for how bridges could be accomplished in this country for safety, innovation, quality, and environmental consciousness. We accomplished this over the Great Mississippi River. It was designed and built in 11 months, a 10-lane interstate through the harsh Minneapolis winter. And that brings us to the Jordan Bridge, which, of course, was closed on November 8th because it was structurally dangerous. This was a very difficult decision for the city of Chesapeake, but it was the right decision because this bridge was really not capable of carrying the traffic and people safely across the river. So when it closed, it created an important and very difficult void in the area for transportation. So we presented to the city an opportunity to put in a new modern bridge in this location. And we have an approved agreement with the city of Chesapeake to own the existing Jordan Bridge, build a new modern concrete Jordan Bridge, design, build, operate, maintain, finance, and own with no city, state, or federal funds, no risk to the city or the state, meet the current and future needs of navigation for the Elizabeth River, built using local labor, local materials, and providing local economic stimulus. Make a bridge that is sustainable, eco-friendly, high strength, redundant, and safe. We include safeguarding for water quality. There is no dredging and no permanent fill. All the existing roadway access along the corridor is completely maintained. It'll also have a user-friendly electronic tolling system. And we're providing crossing for emergency vehicles, which couldn't use the old Jordan Bridge, fire, police, ambulance, and mandatory evacuations at no cost. As you can see from this plan view, an aerial, you can see the new Jordan Bridge in the blue color and the existing bridge, which is just slightly north. As you move north along the Elizabeth River, you have the railroad bridge, which is north of that area. There is a planned development called Bellhalber Station, which is an important aspect of the economic program in the area. We have the Naval Norfolk Naval Shipyard on the western side. And as we look at all of the site conditions, the two dominant components to fitting this bridge into the site are the Interstate 464 on the east and SIPSA on the west. Taking into consideration all of the geometry of the area and looking at both the current and future needs of navigation, we chose to create a bridge geometry that would fit all of those needs by providing the appropriate grades. We can not only provide good grades for vehicle traffic, which is important for trucks and other vehicles, but also meet our ADA requirements for pedestrians and bicyclists program in that area. And so we studied the vessel traffic in the area. We studied how they would make it through the turning basin and what we would be looking at in the future in terms of vessel traffic. It's part of what we do for every bridge that we accomplish. And so that is how we set those dimensions as we started the overall bridge program. So we have 145 feet of vertical clearance and 225 feet of horizontal clearance. Something also special to this bridge is we have a fender system. This special fender system is designed for ship impact. This is makes this a modern bridge, something that you don't see in the older bridges that are along the Elizabeth River. There will no longer be a lift span, so there is no delay. You have freedom for your ships to go through this area without having to call ahead or have delays in this region. The 5% grade, of course, is part of the overall program. Generally, we don't like to do bridges that are beyond 5% grade for vehicle traffic, particularly. In addition to the other environmental features, the approaches will be landscaped. We leave this area looking better than when we found it. The bridge itself has two travel lanes and 8-foot safety shoulders. The previous bridge had no safety shoulders. It had a 4-foot unprotected sidewalk. We'll now have an 8-foot protected sidewalk. The existing bridge has 31 water foundations that cross the Elizabeth River. We will be removing all of those foundations and removing the bridge at no cost to the city or the state. The new bridge has only 10 water foundations, so we will have less intrusion in the water area than the existing bridge. This creates more openness and more protection for the water body. This is what the Jordan Bridge looks like now. We have removed the main span at no cost to the city or state, and we are progressing on towards the other removal activities that will be taking place as the new bridge is put in place as well. You see, north of this bridge, the vertical clearance is restricted by the railroad bridge, and this is 142 feet. The foundations will be built with full respect for the time of year restrictions. We understand those are important, and we are going to move very quickly, but with environmental sensitivity to building those foundations. Realizing, though, that we have 4 months in which to accomplish that operation, this will be quite a challenge. So we want to make sure that we protect the environment well. And in addition to turbidity curtains, we would propose that if we have a few piling after this February date, we would like to use the bubble curtain to protect the fish, similar to what was done at Woodrow Wilson, which was a very effective program. And this will be effective for any potential issues that there could be with the fish in this area. The bridge will be built using precast concrete segmental technology. That means the piers that will support the bridge will all be made out of precast segments, and they will be stacked into place and vertically post-tensioned. The bridge itself will be made out of precast segments, so it will be prefabricated and then assembled very quickly at the site. This reduces the environmental impact at the site because you have less activity over the water and in assembling the structure. This is similar to what we did on the Victory Bridge in New Jersey. The new Jordan Bridge will look similar to the bridge that you see here, which was built in 15 months. And most important, and to us, and I know to you and the people of Hampton Roads and Virginia, is that the South Norfolk Jordan Bridge will protect the environment. That's our focus. That's what we do as bridge designers and builders, is to accomplish it with that respect. So now I would like to introduce Jim Cahoon, our environmental scientist with Bay Environmental in Chesapeake, Virginia.
Thank you, Ms. Figg. Does the commission have any questions of Ms. Figg before she departs? Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Cahoon?
Good morning, commissioners and BMRC staff. My name, as Linda said, is Jim Cahoon. my business, Bay Environmental, is located in Chesapeake. We greatly appreciate the time and that staff has put into it, and the VIMS representatives being here today as well. It's very important to all of us. Thank you. I've been the environmental consultant for the South Norfolk Jordan Bridge project, and I'd like to briefly address a few of the things that you may have heard with respect to the bridge. First, a little background. As the environmental consultant, we began the project by preparing documentation in accordance with NEPA for the lead federal agency for the project, the U.S. Coast Guard. During the preparation of an environmental assessment for the project, we coordinated with many state and federal agencies to determine whether or not the proposed project would have significant impact on the environment, including natural resources. We learned a couple things in our studies very early. First, there's no adverse impact to any threatened or endangered species. There's no adverse impact to essential fish habitat, as Dave O'Brien said. And there's only minimal impact to tidal wetlands. It's actually a total in both the cities of Chesapeake and Portsmouth of 1,224 square feet. I'd like to address a few issues a little further with you, specifically the steps we're taking to avoid and mitigate the potential for impacts to fish species and habitat, and the care we're taking to mitigate the potential for redistribution of contamination at the site. We coordinated with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Virginia Department of Conservation and Recreation, the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, as well as BIMS. These agencies determined that there's no impact to threatened or endangered species. In fact, the only issue of concern to the project raised by these agencies is the fact that the southern branch of the Elizabeth River is confirmed anadromous fish use area. During the preparation of the essential fish habitat assessment, we studied the impacts to 11 species known to inhabit or use the Elizabeth River during summer or all of their life cycles. And some of these are very important commercial and recreational species, such as red drum, black sea bass, bluefish, and two types of flounder. And the two types of potential impacts to these species were impacts from noise and pressure during pile driving, because it affects the swim bladders of species, as well as potentially moves them away from their habitat during spawning. And secondly, the redistribution of contaminated sediments. NOAA's National Marine Fisheries Service scientist, Dave O'Brien, reviewed our proposed measures for mitigating these two types of impacts and concluded that as long as we employ the measures we propose, there's no substantial impact to essential fish habitat, managed fish species, or their prey species. Specifically, those measures were to install and maintain erosion sediment controls during construction to prevent stormwater runoff from entering the river, and two, to install and maintain silt curtains with oil boom during pile driving operations to reduce pressure waves and to prevent the migration of contaminated sediment. The silt curtain and oil boom methodology was proven effective just a month ago at the dredging of creosote-contaminated sediments at Money Point in Chesapeake, just a mile upriver, and this is a picture of that dredging operation. The issue at hand for the bridge is the fact that BIMS has conservatively recommended a time of year restriction for pile driving. They admit that it is a conservative recommendation in the absence of data. However, in the follow-up email that Commissioner Bowman discussed, they agree that a time of year restriction may not be needed if we utilize a measure, mitigation measure known as a bubble curtain. Air bubble curtains are relatively new to Virginia. Matter of fact, we haven't found any other projects other than Woodrow Wilson that has employed them. Essentially, what a bubble curtain is a curtain of air bubbles that you place around the pile as you're driving it. What it's supposed to do is to minimize noise and pressure impacts that are created from that pile. Because air is less dense than water, noise and pressure transmission is greatly reduced by the use of the bubble curtains. Furthermore, VIMS noted a couple things in that email, that the use of bubble curtains reduces pile driving noise, that concrete pilings like we're proposing to use have less effect than steel pilings. If you think about ringing a bell, that's what it sounds like when you bang on a steel piling, and that the bubble curtains employed at the Woodrow Wilson Bridge mitigated adverse impacts to anadromous fish. In fact, with respect to the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, BIM stated that bubble curtains were extremely effective in reducing if not eliminating, harmful pressure waves. What we're proposing is that we utilize air bubble curtains for pile driving activities between February 15th and June 30th. This is over and above the mitigation measures recommended by National Marine Fisheries Service, determined to be adequate to protect marine resources. I'd also note that in addition to an air bubble curtain, we are proposing to use a silk curtain with oil boom, so we have two levels of protection. What this will do is the silk curtain, which floats on the surface and is anchored to the bottom, so the entire water column, excludes fish from the work area. And I'll discuss the oil boom in just a second. Inside of the silk curtain, the air bubbler goes around each pile as it's driven to mitigate those sound and noise waves. So two levels of protection for anadromous fish and any other fish species within the river. The second environmental concern with the project is the redistribution and re-suspension of contaminated sediments. The project site contains sediment contaminated with creosote and heavy metals. Those of you that may be aware, the Atlantic Wood Industries site on our western bank is a Superfund site that EPA is currently working on. EPA has been very interested in the South Norfolk Bridge project because of their involvement in that site. EPA raised concerns over the redistribution and re-suspension of contaminants, so we've coordinated with them to ensure we're not moving around contamination within the river during our construction activities. The use of the silk curtain and oil boom has alleviated their concerns. And this is a picture, by the way, of the air bubble curtain, essentially a basket placed around the pile. Compressed air is pumped down into it, and it creates a bubble curtain. The oil boom and sediment control, this is the Money Point dredging project, and you can see clearly turbid to the right and inside of the silk curtain, less turbid outside. The floating silk curtain, as I mentioned, has a skirt that is long enough to reach the bottom of the river. It's anchored to the bottom to reduce drift during tidal flow. The maximum current in the southern branch of the Elizabeth River is no more than about 3 knots, so the silk curtain is relatively easy to maintain. The floating oil boom material, which is really an absorbent sock, is placed on the inside of the silk curtain to capture any sheen that may be created by the disturbance of creosote-contaminated sediments. I was personally involved in the Money Point project and witnessed firsthand the effectiveness of this system. Turbidity and sheen were clearly visible inside of this during the dredging operation and disturbance to the bottom, and clearly not visible outside of the system. My visual observations were confirmed by BIMS. They quantitatively monitored polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or creosote contaminants, real-time during the dredging operation, and concluded that the silk curtain and oil boom system was effective at reducing the release of contamination. We're confident that the use of silk curtains and oil boom system will also be effective at the South Norfolk Jordan Bridge. To summarize, we are proposing the following to minimize and offset environmental impacts from the South Norfolk Jordan Bridge. One, provide compensation for all permanent impacts to tidal wetlands as required by the local wetlands boards. We're providing 1,394 square feet of compensation through the purchase of mitigation bank credits for a total of 1,224 square feet of wetlands. Secondly, utilize the silk curtains with oil boom around pile driving locations during the entire time that we're doing pile driving. And three, utilize the air bubble curtains during any pile driving activity between February 15th and June 30th. I thank you for your time and consideration, and stand by for any questions.
Any questions, Mr. Cahoon? Mr. Tankard.
Just to a qualifying point, if I could, with regard to the air bubble curtain, have you or FIG had experience with this air bubble curtain?
I've not personally, no, sir. Much like BIMS, I had to do an exhaustive literature search. Primarily, air bubble curtains have been utilized in the Northwest for the protection of salmon species. They're also used in Florida for more Caribbean waters. They're extensively used throughout Canada. They have not been employed much in Virginia, and this is my feeling, because we haven't had time of year restrictions imposed, because we have a lack of data, frankly. This is one of the first projects that in many years that's using driving concrete piles in the river.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the same issue, we have an email in our packet, which appears at 3-A-7, from Molly Ruggiero at HEMS, and she discusses these different types of bubble curtains, and there are three types identified in the email. One is a single-ring curtain, multi-ring curtains, and finally confined curtains, and they have different levels of protection and effectiveness. And she describes a confined air bubble curtain as being the most effective in higher energy environment. Based on the photograph that you provided, is this a multi-ring? Is this a confined type of air bubble?
There are actually two types of multi-ring as well. This is a non-confined. It's essentially a mesh, and the air diffusers are those bands that you see going around the curtains. We've been pricing these types of systems. The confined is essentially a silk curtain with a bubble, air bubble curtain inside of it. Because of the tidal flow, we intend to set the silk curtain around the entire pier location, which includes a number of pilings, and then use this type within. So it's not confined immediately to the piling. However, we've mitigated tidal flow with the silk curtain. So an unconfined is appropriate. The bubble won't have tidal flow immediately affecting the bubbles.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Calhoun. Who's next? Wishes to speak? While the good mayor's coming up, I was remiss in welcoming the local leaders from here. I didn't realize there was so many in the audience. Good to have you here, sir.
Yes, sir.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
Yes,
who you
sir.
Represent?
My name is Alan Paul Krasnoff. I am the mayor of the city of Chesapeake. Good morning, all.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Commissioner Bowman, Associate Commissioners, BMRC staff, Secretary Homer, state legislators, and ladies and gentlemen. In addition to a letter previously submitted by me on behalf of the city of Chesapeake, I want to thank you for this opportunity to submit additional comments for the record. I also want to commend the Commission staff for its thorough evaluation of the permit's application. In the interest of time, and with your permission, I will defer to the FIG team with respect to key environmental benefits of the project. Rather, I will focus on many public benefits of the new Jordan Bridge. At the outset, I want to make it clear that Chesapeake and Portsmouth are in support of this project. Moreover, the construction of the new Jordan Bridge benefits not only residents of Chesapeake and Portsmouth, but also the entire Hampton Roads region, with minimal impact to the environment without adversely impacting the restoration and the use of the southern branch of the Elizabeth River for recreational or commercial purposes. The original Jordan Bridge was also authorized by Congress in 1926. And operated as a private toll facility for nearly 50 years before being deeded to the city of Chesapeake in 1977. As noted by your staff, in recent years, the bridge opened over 10,000 times per year, impeding both motorists, commercial and recreational mariners, and Navy vessels alike. Vehicle crossings included 7,000 vehicles per day with bicyclists and pedestrians taking approximately 50 to 75 trips on a typical weekday. On November 8, 2008, the city of Chesapeake made the difficult but necessary decision to close the 80-year-old Jordan Bridge due to safety concerns. Following the closure, Chesapeake and Portsmouth, working in partnership with the Hampton Roads Transportation Planning Organization and Hampton Roads Transit, provided bus service to help mitigate traffic concerns. Unfortunately, no one used this service because the buses were forced to use downtown tunnel, which was now more congested than ever due to the closure of the Jordan Bridge, and the bus service was soon discontinued. Given the lack of transportation funding, A replacement bridge seemed like a pipe dream at the time. However, in December 2008, Fig Bridge Developers presented a proposal to Chesapeake City Council to construct, operate, and own a new Jordan Bridge at absolutely no cost to any government entity. As proposed, a new fixed span bridge will accommodate roadway and maritime traffic alike, without disruptions that were previously experienced with the old drawbridge. The new span will also provide free access and use by pedestrians and bicyclists, including those that may be disabled. Consistent with city practices and our executed agreement with FIG. A new South Norfolk Jordan Bridge will also provide additional key public benefits, not the least of which are the reestablishment of a vital crossing of the southern branch of the Elizabeth River, the ability to first responders to move first responders and equipment in an emergency. Our fire department notes that Portsmouth Fire Department has region's lead for hazardous material response, and Chesapeake is the regional lead for petroleum firefighting foam. Next, a non-tunnel route for hurricane evacuation. Improve access to military installations, including the Norfolk Naval Shipyard and Portsmouth Naval Hospital. Significant congestion relief, as well as revitalization and enhanced economic opportunities for South Norfolk and Portsmouth. After advertising for competing proposals, Chesapeake City Council unanimously approved the FIG proposal on January 27, 2009. Shortly thereafter, Senate Bill 1550 was introduced in the Virginia General Assembly to facilitate the emergency replacement of the Jordan Bridge. The bill was signed into law by Governor Tim Kaine on March 27, 2009. Several legislators who championed this bill are with us. Their bipartisan commitment to this project on the front end, unanimous votes in both houses of the General Assembly, and their presence at your commission today is a testament to their unwavering support of this critical project. I have thanked each and every one of their backing of this project, and I do so again today. Thank you. Thank you all. As has been noted, the project has received overwhelming endorsement from Congressman Randy Forbes, Governor Kaine, Virginia Secretary of Transportation Pierce Homer, our neighboring municipalities, the Hampton Roads Partnership, the Hampton Roads Transportation Planning Organization, hospitals, businesses, and many others. Letters of no objection from the United States Navy and Environmental Protection Agency were also submitted to the Coast Guard. In sum, there were over 900 comments in support, with less than 100 in opposition. In fairness, there has been much discussion regarding reasonable accommodations for navigation. On that point, I strongly encourage the Commission to defer those matters to the Coast Guard, as noted by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And it states, the Coast Guard is the federal agency charged with oversight of navigable waters. In summary, Commissioners, the bridge project before you represents a vital connection that will have a positive impact on the health, welfare, and economic vitality of Chesapeake, Portsmouth, and the entire Hampton Roads region. Gentlemen, I am therefore requesting the Virginia Marine Resources Commission approve the joint permit application authorizing the crossing of the southern branch of the Elizabeth River with a high-level, fixed-span, private toll bridge as currently proposed by Fig Bridge Developers. With me today is the staff from city managers and the city attorney's offices, and the Departments of Fire, Public Works, and Economic Development. To the extent that I can, I stand ready to answer any questions you may have, and I thank you for this opportunity and for your valuable time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Krasnoff. Any questions from Mayor Krasnoff? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate your kind comments.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Senator, good morning.
Good morning, sir, and to all of the commissioners. My name is Yvonne Miller. I'm the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, and I'm delighted to be here today in support of the FIG project for Chesapeake. You may not be aware that I represent the city of Norfolk, a small part of the city of Chesapeake, and a smaller part of the city of Virginia Beach. All of the persons in my district and in parts of the cities that I represent use the bridge, and they are deeply inconvenienced because the bridge is now closed. I come this morning to ask you to be supportive of this project because there are large numbers of people who are being inconvenienced because the bridge is inactive. The people who are putting up the money have made a good faith effort to put forth a project that will be very profitable for our region. Also, I need to say to you that the Commonwealth of Virginia, because of the inaction of its legislators, is not in a position to replace the bridge. And because we don't have the money to replace the bridge for our constituents, we are very grateful to the people who had the foresight to see this as a project that would not only profit our constituents, but would also profit the private entity. I represent Norfolk, so I understand the concern that has been expressed by people from the ports, and because of the fact that we have the very best natural port probably in this whole region, and we can receive larger ships once the Panama Canal is finished. There must be a way to resolve that issue, but stopping this bridge project is not the way. And so I recommend that you will recommend that this project go forth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions, Senator Miller? Thank you, ma'am. Good day, Delegates Rule.
How you doing, sir?
Fine, sir. And yourself?
Thank you for my promotion earlier. To the commission.
Senility sits in sometimes at the ripe old age of 49. Good to have you here, sir.
Commissioner, I thank you for the opportunity. I wanted to base my facts on what came before the General Assembly. Not having the experience and the knowledge that you have, we listen to those who oppose and those who are in opposition. This came before the Senate. I believe the bill was put in by Senator Levin, I believe. Came before the Senate, there was a hearing. As you know, in the General Assembly, the bill proposed as a hearing before the committee, and then it goes on the full committee. 40-0. My question was, how come no one who had opposition were there at that point to speak? Then it goes to the House. It goes to a committee again. And those who are in opposition, those who are for it, they have the opportunity again to speak for or against it. No one passed the House 100%. And that's the very few times, sir, that Republican and Democrat agree on anything.
I know.
Now, then I look at not having the foresight that you have. I went out to the bridge and I said, if this bridge, the new bridge, is proposed to be wider, then to the right, I believe, less than 300 yards, I could be wrong, you have the Beltline Railroad. That bridge is there. The new bridge proposed is wider than this bridge. Are you going to take that bridge down? I don't think so. There's a proposal for that. Then to the left, less than a half a mile or so, you got the Gilmerton Bridge. That will be closed because the city of Chesapeake proposed to repair that bridge. When they close that bridge, we can have something on our hands. Less than a couple of weeks ago, the bridge was hit. Everything stopped in Tidewater because you cannot cross that bridge. Now, so this new bridge is a better bridge, and we said, but then I asked the city council, my friend Alan Presnell, are we proposed to have a new Gilmerton Bridge? No. They can try to fix that what you have there. And beside that bridge, you have North and Western Bridge that goes up and down for the trains. Would that bridge be changed? No. So then I'm saying that why, if we had problems, why those who are in opposition, it would have been good had they came to the General Assembly and says that this is what needed to be done, I'm in opposition because of this. Last we have a letter signed by the governor. And sir, I would welcome you to come to Chesapeake at lunchtime, and I'll buy you lunch. I'm saying my own money, I'm retired from Verizon, not state money. And I would love to have lunch with each one of you that I'll pay for out of my retirement check from Verizon. Then just at 1 o'clock. Then at 3:15, you will get a notice from home that says that if you're home by 5 o'clock on this side of Newport News, by 5 o'clock you get $1 million. But leave at 3:15. And I would say if anyone could tell me if you can leave City Hall Chesapeake by 3:15 and get to Newport News by 5 o'clock, you can't do it. We have a major problem. So yet we have someone here who proposed to say without taxpayer dollars that we have built a bridge. And they presented this to council, to the House, nobody in opposition until now comes up. Asking y'all, please do the right thing. Help us. We have a major problem in Hampton Road transportation. You can help. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Delegate. Who's next? Senator, good afternoon. Well, good morning, sir.
Commission. I'm Harry Blevins. I represent the 14th District, which includes Chesapeake and part of Virginia Beach. I'm not going to use you folks listening to me say what's already been said. I think this presentation speaks for itself. Both of them, the staff person made his presentation, and Mrs. Figg, the mayor, passing off, and the others have spoken. It's my hope that you will take those facts and see what this.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Delegate.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Delegate John Cosgrove. I represent the 78th District in the city of Chesapeake. The Jordan Bridge is not in my district. But I want to tell you that if you look here in the front row, you're going to see two senators, two delegates, two Democrats, two Republicans. In fact, my brother Lionel Spruill and I basically are pretty much politically diametrically opposed on just about everything. He's a far left leaning yellow dog Democrat, and I'm a right conservative, white starch, collar Republican. But when it comes to the benefit of Chesapeake and its citizens, Delegate Spruill and I walk lockstep. We have a problem in Chesapeake with the Jordan Bridge. We have a solution sitting right before us. As you all know, our economy is such, the transportation dollars are non-existent. We're taking money from maintenance when we should be putting that into construction. The opportunity to gain new artery for the folks in Chesapeake and Portsmouth and Norfolk exists right before you today. The city of Chesapeake and Portsmouth, the mayor of Norfolk, as been said before, the new transportation planning organization, which I am now a member, have all come out in positive support of this endeavor. Now, the objections have been height and width, but you've seen the chart. And I sit here and kind of scratch my head and saying, all right, the objections are that it's not wide enough, but it's wider than any of the other bridges except for one. The height's not high enough, but it's higher than any other bridge height that has a restriction. It's wider than the new Gilmerton Bridge. It's wider than all of the other bridges except for that one railroad bridge. Gentlemen, this bridge is an artery that meets the criteria of the width of that waterway. It doesn't make any sense for somebody to come up and say, we want it wider and higher, when all these other bridges make that a moot point. It makes no sense. And I have to tell you, as a legislator, I am very, very concerned about the organizations that would try to hold this project up based on those tenuous arguments. It really calls into question the validity of their thinking process. Now, everybody wants the widest and the tallest and the best we could possibly have. But what we have now is an opportunity to get a bridge built by the private sector. It doesn't cost Chesapeake, it doesn't cost the state, it doesn't cost the feds. This is a sweet deal. And you aren't going to find things like this very often. And if the Commonwealth were to say, no, we're going to throw some wrenches into this and make sure it doesn't happen, I think you're going to see public-private partnership opportunities dry up in this Commonwealth, because they're going to take a look at this and say, the deal doesn't get much better than that to the state, and they turned it down. And I will say that we have former DMV Commissioner Phil Chouquette, who's now, you know, high-powered, you know, I won't call him a lobbyist because that's kind of a dirty word, but Philip has a tremendous reputation among all of the General Assembly members, Democrat, Republican, House, Senate. Philip has looked at this. We've talked consistently. We've had meetings. And if anybody did a lot to enhance transportation in the Commonwealth of Virginia, it was Philip Chouquette. He's involved in this. He signed off on this. He's certainly an employee of FIG. But he brings a tremendous amount of credibility to the process. Gentlemen, I'm not going to take a whole lot more of your time, but I just think it's so critical that this project go forward. It is so critical to the transportation system in Hampton Roads that we all know is very, very impacted right now, that to turn this down and not go forward with the FIG bridge as it is currently designed would be a disaster. And I ask for your concurrence and your positive recommendation on this bridge, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Delegate. Any questions of Delegate Cosgrove? Thank you, sir.
And I'm in a two-hour parking spot, so I thought we were going to
Ms. Seamus, good to have you here.
Thank you. And Mr. Secretary, Senators, Delegates, and Commissioners, my name is Elizabeth Simmons. I'm a member of the Portsmouth City Council. I'm here to represent the City of Portsmouth and make you aware that we need this bridge in Portsmouth. Portsmouth City Council several months ago passed a unanimous resolution approving the building of this bridge. As those before me have mentioned, just a week ago, we had a situation in Portsmouth where you couldn't get out of Portsmouth eastbound towards Norfolk because the tunnel had to be closed. It is imperative to the citizens of Portsmouth and to the people, especially who work at the Naval Shipyard, at the SIPSA plant, and the Naval Hospital, that they be able to get in and out of Portsmouth. You don't get in and out of Portsmouth without going through a bridge and a tunnel, and this bridge is imperative to us. Unless these good folks behind me figure out how to find more transportation money, this is a wonderful alternative to have a private bridge, and I would request your support.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else in support? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Mike Crist. I'm not with any city council or any elected officials. I'm a engineer with Moffitt and Nickel. You heard about the report that was submitted, and if I could, I'd like to just provide a quick summary of that report, because clearly the navigation issue is something of concern to everyone in the room. I have a brief presentation here. And by way of introduction to Moffitt and Nickel, we specialize in ports and harbors navigation projects. Back in 2002, we worked with the Chesapeake Bay Tunnel to set the depth of the future tunnels for that construction. We worked with VDOT last year on the proposed height and width for a Hampton Roads bridge tunnel. Not that that's going to be constructed anytime soon, but they consulted with us to determine that bridge height and clearance. We're currently working with the Virginia Port Authority on the Craney Island expansion and have been involved in their ship navigation studies on that project. So we're very familiar with the waterway. When we saw the challenges and the controversy surrounding the bridge, took it upon ourselves to gather some information and submit that to the Coast Guard, and that's the report that has made its way to you all. Certainly you've seen some of these pieces of information this morning, and some of it's been summarized before. What I'd like to point out is the current channel dimensions. There's been a lot of concern about, are we unnecessarily restricting navigation in the future? I think it's important to look at the current design dimensions that the Corps of Engineers designed the channel to. And this slide summarizes the design vessel being a 60,000 deadweight ton with a 104-foot beam. That's a Handy Max, Panamax type vessel, and I'll show you some dimensions on those vessels shortly. You see there the dimensions on the channels, starting at the top of the graphic, the lower reach, a width of 450-foot on that channel with an authorized depth of 45. It's currently only dredged to 40 feet. And then moving on down the middle reach, and the upper reach where you've heard about the mill dam turning basin. And I'd like to point out that the mill dam turning basin, while it is only 800 feet, is not the single restriction on that channel. And when we look at the channel design, there are several things that come into play that guides the maximum vessel that we want to operate on that channel, regardless of bridge restrictions, first being the width of the channel. And when we look at the guidelines from the Army Corps, it's based on some bank clearances, the vessel beam, and some factors based on their experience. That gets us about 2.8 to 3.2 times the vessel beam. When you look at the channel going down the southern branch, the restriction is somewhere around 500 feet. That being a little wider than the actual channel dimensions there at 450 feet, which puts you in a theoretical beam of about 156 to 180 feet. Now, you heard about the mill dam turning basin. That's way down on the southern branch, and there's certainly a restriction in that stretch of the river. But ultimately, the Corps of Engineers determined that the maximum vessel length on this stretch of river is about 775 feet, which has some implications to heights, widths, and depths of those vessels. The channel depth, based on the various factors there, is about a 42.5-foot draft vessel, allowing some underkeel clearances and safety factors for that stretch of river. Ultimately, based on the Corps' report, that gives you a vessel with a design, as you see here, of about 104-foot beam, 775 feet long, and 42.5-foot draft. That puts you in about a Panamax-class vessel, or the upper end of the Handymax class. And what I have here is a table that shows you some average dimensions. And I caution you that these are average. We can always find a vessel that would exceed these and wouldn't fit under the bridge or wouldn't fit width-wise. But what you see here is the second row, the Handymax, and the Panamax vessel right below it is really what this channel has been designed for, regardless of the bridge restrictions. And when you look at the air drafts there to the right side, clearly 145 feet starts to get tight, but those vessels certainly make it through there. The post-Panamax that you see down there about the fourth row, you'll see that that's averaging about 772 feet. We've heard about the Panama Canal as that is widened and the new canal locks open in 2014. We'll see that trend upward, but clearly 1,100-foot-long ships cannot fit down the southern branch of the river. So when we talk about looking to the future, it's our opinion that we're not talking about the superposed Panamax vessels, the Cape-sized vessels, or the very large bulk carriers that you see at the bottom. Those vessels simply would not fit in this channel with or without bridges in place. And to put some of that in perspective, this is the smaller vessels, the handy size, shown under a rendering of the bridge. And then a Handymax vessel, and then a Panamax vessel that you see, while it still has a little bit of clearance on the air draft and on the side, starts to rub the bottom of the channel, really pushing the limits of what the channel can handle. And then anything over this really exceeds the channel limitations and is not really a practical consideration for reasonable navigation on that river. Cape size is really your coal carriers, and then your very large bulkers are large oil tankers, which would never be seen on the southern branch of the river. I would just provide those for some perspective. One of the concerns that I had was are we going to unnecessarily limit commodities moving down the river? So we looked at the businesses on the southern branch and what type of businesses we have down there. Generally, you're talking about construction materials, liquid materials, bulk materials that move in the handy-size, handy-max vessels. And the current bulk fleet here, you see, handy-size, handy-max vessels making up about 64% of the fleet. One of the concerns that I had as an engineer was, are these going to become obsolete over time as new vessels are constructed? So we surveyed the order book of vessels that are under construction now, and we see here, just in 2009, what's on the order books, over 55% of the vessels on order are handy-size and handy-max vessels, which clearly would fit in the river. And even if you throw in the Panamax vessels, it goes up a little higher. So in our opinion, the bridge that has been proposed by FIG does not unnecessarily restrict navigation on the river, and in fact appears to have taken all of these things into consideration. Given their geometric considerations, I think they've done what they can to get the bridge as high and wide as possible. Certainly higher and wider is always better, but as Linda Figg provided earlier, there's some geometric constraints there that don't allow it to go larger. So with that, I thank you for the time. And
any questions of Mr. Crist? Thank you for the presentation, sir. Very informative. Who's next?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commission members. My name is Jeff Rowland. I reside at 1234 Edgewood Avenue in the South Norfolk section of Chesapeake. I realize that your task today is to balance the needs of our marine environment and our public use. I come to you today wearing many hats. The first hat is as a business owner on the southern branch of the Elizabeth River at Money Point, in that tidal basin, that term basin you're talking about. As a business owner, I realize that the ability to move products and people is extremely important to the growth of our economy. Second hat I wear is as the chairman of the Chesapeake Planning Commission. In that capacity, I realize that planning for the future development is in a responsible manner is a paramount for our health of our communities, both on the Chesapeake side and the Portsmouth side. But most importantly, and that's where I want to dwell with you today, is as a lifelong resident of the South Norfolk area, a member and past president of the South Norfolk Civic League, of which the membership voted unanimously to support Figg's design. I grew up enjoying the river, the waters, and the marshes of Mill Dam Creek. I enjoyed the pristine area and watched as it degraded. I also enjoyed the opportunity as a young man to enjoy the waterways and the things that you're here to protect. I would like to point out to you that this bridge and its construction and the type of construction that it brings will be an environmental help, not an environmental hurt. First, the construction provides for safe routes for future utility crossings of the river, of which you've heard several today going in subaqueous areas. The construction of the bridge in the precast concrete mode will allow for those utilities and telecommunications devices to be passed through the middle of the bridge at no disturbance whatsoever to future crossings of that river. The new bridge will cap a portion of the Atlantic Wood brownfield, reducing and possibly eliminating further contamination from that portion of the brownfield. A major improvement to the health of the river. And finally, the removal of the old bridge foundation will provide less of a footprint on the river than is currently there, providing more room for your fish, crabs, and the sand fiddlers that I love. But I appreciate your opportunity, the opportunity to speak to you today, and I wholeheartedly support the design of the Figg Bridge project as designed, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you. Who's next in support?
Mr. Commissioner and board members, my name is Julia Hilligas. I come before you today in my capacity as a senior environmental planner for the Hampton Roads Planning District Commission. I have a brief prepared statement to share with you. The environmental staff of the commission would like to formally go on record in support of the Figg Bridge development and the construction of the new Jordan Bridge, which is a critical link between the cities of Chesapeake and Portsmouth. Our environmental staff has reviewed this much-needed project and found very minimal environmental impacts, particularly for a project of this size. The project is located in what is already an industrial corridor, and any impacts to wetlands in the area have been minimized, and mitigation steps are planned for this project. Figg Bridge development is taking all the necessary steps to avoid environmental impacts on the site, and we wholeheartedly endorse this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hilligas. Any questions? Thank you. Who's next in support? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Francis Roberts. I'm here today in my capacity as the executive director of the Hampton Roads Military and Federal Facilities Alliance. The Alliance is a nonprofit corporation created by Hampton Roads elected officials in 2006 to represent the common interests of the cities of Chesapeake, Franklin, Hampton, Newport News, Pocosin, Portsmouth, Suffolk, Virginia Beach, and Williamsburg, and the counties of Isle of Wight, James City, and York in matters relating to the protection, sustainment, and growth of military and federal activities in Hampton Roads. These activities, as you may know, contribute 45% of the gross regional product, and therefore community support for their respective missions and creating environments outside the fence, as it were, are important to the Alliance mission. Optimizing transportation infrastructure across Hampton Roads is important to the future mission performance of the military and federal activities we are so blessed to have here in this region. We cannot and must not take their continued presence for granted. Therefore, projects like the replacement of the Jordan Bridge are thus initiatives that we support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Who's next? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I'm Jesse Williams of the Hampton Roads Chamber of Commerce. And on behalf of the Chesapeake and the Portsmouth Division of the Chamber, we have reviewed and wholeheartedly support the FIG development project. And we ask, after studying and reviewing this completely, that you approve it. And thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Andy Picard, and I'm here as a staff representative of the Hampton Roads Transportation Planning Organization. The highway crossings of the Elizabeth River began the construction of the Jordan Bridge in 1928. And new crossings were consistently added every 10 to 15 years through 1987 with the expansion of the downtown tunnel. No highway capacity improvements have been added to this corridor in 22 years. Yet the volume of vehicles crossing the Elizabeth River increased 36% between 1990 and 2008, 1.7 times that of the region as a whole. As a result, backups are the norm each weekday, with the downtown tunnel having the highest average daily volume of all the tunnels in the region at over 100,000 vehicles each weekday. The Jordan Bridge provides a critical option to a congested downtown tunnel and provides connectivity between communities on each side of the river. Nearly 106,000 additional people are expected to live west of the Elizabeth River in 2030 as compared to the year 2000, an indication of expected continued pressure on this corridor. Additionally, if you do not have a car or should choose to travel via bicycle or walking, the reconstruction of the Jordan Bridge will restore one of the few highway facilities across the Elizabeth River with bike or ped accommodations. The Hampton Roads Transportation Planning Organization Board received a presentation on the proposed South Norfolk Jordan Bridge project at their June 2009 meeting, and the board voted unanimously to approve a resolution of support for the project. And I have a few copies of that resolution.
Present. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions of the gentleman? Thanks. Anyone else in support? Anyone here in opposition to this project? Come forward, sir. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
You state your name for the record, please.
I'm David Host, president of Key Parker Host Incorporated, ship agents here since 1923.
Good to have you here, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to address this issue. You know, this is the first public hearing that the maritime industry has been able to voice a say in this, so I just go on record to say that. I serve here in the capacity not only of my business as a ship agent, but also I'm the designated port champion to the Southern Branch 45 and 40-foot deepening project. This designation was given me by the Army Corps of Engineers and the maritime industry, and it's to spearhead the dredging project on the Southern Branch and to provide momentum in working with the Corps and the stakeholders, many of them are, which are here, that would like to comment following my few remarks here. We wrote a letter, so I'll try to be concise and not go on and on, but we represent over 300 ships of the 375 ships that transit the Southern Branch on an annual basis, not to mention the 1,000 tug and barges that go up and down. And these ships are basically carrying liquid and bulk cargoes, vital to our region. We oppose the FIG bridge design with regards to the horizontal and vertical clearance restrictions of the replacement bridge above the federal navigable channel, which are the same as the original bridge that was constructed in 1928. It is a fact that if the bridge is built with the proposed design, the terminals and users of the Southern Branch will be faced with a barrier that will become a further hindrance to navigation and will restrict future commerce for decades. Let me get it right. We are in favor of a bridge. Just build it right. Ships are getting larger. It is a fact older tankers and bulk carriers are being replaced by larger, new categories of ships. New buildings call for the handy-sized vessels to be replaced by the larger Handy Max, and the traditional Panamax being replaced by the larger Consumer Max. For tankers, the larger Aframax will be the ship of choice. I realize Moffitt did the presentation for 2009, but look at the order book for 2012, 2014. These big ships are coming. When the expansion of the Panama Canal, the previous said today, is completed in 2014, these will be the ships trading for competitiveness, and ports unable to accommodate them will lose out. Virginia clearly is in a key position to get capitalizing on attracting new business, some of which will be business diverted from those vessels now forced to call the West Coast. Just look at our sister ports to the south. New bridges have been constructed over the shipping channels approaching the ports of Charleston, Savannah, and Brunswick within the past 20 years. In each instance, a new bridge replaced an existing structure built between 1920 and 1950. Each of these new bridges has a vertical clearance of 185 feet and horizontal clearance between 500 and 600 feet. Waterfront facilities along the Southern Branch have invested heavily in capital improvements to accommodate larger ships to remain competitive with ports to the north and south. The dredging project I previously mentioned is based on these ships being able to fully utilize this waterway, and the new depths could be in jeopardy if the proposed bridge is built. Navigational safety of these vessels carrying coal, grain, fertilizer, scrap, cement, salt, propane, gasoline, and other oil products is currently a challenge and will be more so with larger ships. The other two bridges on the river of similar vintage will also soon be candidates for modernization or demolition. I will comment the two other bridges, the Gilmerton and the No. 7 Railway Bridge, shouldn't be considered in this. The 40-45-foot dredging project, the authorization from water from Congress in 1986, ends at the Gilmerton Bridge, so you'll still have the same size ships transiting those two bridges. So we're only dealing with the other two bridges that I'm saying will need to be replaced, and there's some other means to have that done through the Truman-Hobbs Act and so forth. So don't be short-sighted on the I'm sorry FIG has to be first, but this is the first that we have to deal with, and we're going to have to deal with this for the next 100 years. So three items of significance that could affect your area of responsibility to protect the citizens of the Commonwealth are as follows. The larger ships, the one that can fit, will be carrying additional foreign ballast water that ships must retain on board to pass under the proposed bridge and eventually pumped out into the Southern Branch, some of it carrying unknown foreign aquatic species. Number two, the current FIG bridge design will likely increase, in view of the larger ships, a bridge illusion by a gasoline tanker, an LPG vessel, or any bulk carrier or tanker that could spill fuel, chemicals, and other commodities, disrupting the marine environment for years. And as I previously mentioned, the deepening project would be very positive for cleaning up the river, and as previously stated, will be in jeopardy if this bridge is built as proposed. Our opposition to the bridge design is about jobs, tax revenue, and creating new business, but most importantly, the environment. We realize it is a balance, but the port has been determined to be the largest economic engine in the Commonwealth. I think you will admit we have been good stewards as well. The permit for construction must be denied until the developers can provide a design which allows for unrestricted navigation while properly addressing highway transportation needs. Just a few side comments, and I'm going to let all my colleagues stand up, but from a few comments that was here, and we had quite a political delegation, you know this has become a political issue, but we just can't be short-sighted. That's my message. The Moffitt-Nickel study was unsolicited. It was after the Coast Guard review process. I think there are many flaws in it. I'd said about the larger ship sizes going beyond 2009, and I think some of the pilots here and so forth will address the navigational flaws that are in that report. The Coast Guard letters here, you heard the number of for and against. I think one letter from a member of a resident in the Civic League, whereas the Maritime Association representing over 500 members, also gave a letter, as well as a very strong letter from the Corps of Engineers. Delegate Spruill said that unanimously it voted in February, the House of Delegates, Republicans, Democrats, to approve this bridge. Let me just correct that. It was approval to turn the bridge over to the city of Chesapeake in these emergency conditions. No restrictions of the bridge were known at that time. In fact, it wasn't until June that the maritime industry knew about the height and width restrictions, and that was shortly just before the Coast Guard put out their comment letter on June 5th. The bridge is a quick fix. Once again, we're in favor of a bridge, but build it right. Traditionally, you've represented watermen. That's what we are, and this is about the future. Try to be concise, and quite a few people here.
Thank you, Mr. Host. Any questions of Mr. Host?
Yes,
sir. Dr. McConaughey.
What depth do you see in the future of the channel?
Going to Paradise Creek, which is the railroad bridge, would be going from 40 to 45 feet. That would affect facilities like Giant Cement, Purdue, and then beyond that bridge up to the Gimleton Bridge would be 30, what's currently 35 to 40. That has been authorized by Congress with the Navy deepening project that hopefully is going to be approved for the carriers getting to the shipyard 48 feet. We're trying to piggyback that project and make it as cost effective as we can. So now is the time and to continue to promote this Southern Branch deepening project.
Further questions? Mr. Host, I have one question. You mentioned the replacement of the other bridges that could be accomplished in the near future. Do you have any idea or any information to back up how that's going to be perfected?
Well, bridges cannot restrict waterways. That's by law, federal waterways. That by law, that's an act of Congress. And as these ships get larger, the other bridges are going to be deemed to restricting navigational traffic. So under the Truman-Hobbs Act, it states that the bridge owner must replace the bridge or as deemed by the Secretary of Transportation. So we envision, now there are some caveats in there about mutually agreeing if you improve infrastructure, there are some participation by both parties, the federal government and the bridge owner. But I'm saying Truman-Hobbs can take care of these other bridges, in my opinion, but this bridge is on the table today, and I think we have to be cognizant that these other bridges are going to be replaced. They're old. They're 1920, they're old vintage.
Which begs the question, when then are they going to be replaced?
Well, once again, we're preparing for the Panama Canal. You're going to see the larger ships, 2014. I'm seeing over the next 10, 15 years, they're going to be replaced, but you're building a bridge that's going to be here for the next 100 years. So, and other people will address some of these navigational concerns.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Who's next? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Commissioner Roman, Associate Commissioners. My name is Dave Sump.
I need you to raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Proceed, sir.
My name is Dave Sump. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Trout & Sanders, and I'm here to speak today on behalf of Purdue Incorporated. Purdue is located at 501 Barnes Road in Chesapeake. Its facility is located just downstream from the Norfolk Portsmouth Beltline Bridge and the Old Jordan Bridge. There are no other bridges between the Purdue facility and the open ocean. Purdue has been at this facility for over 50 years. It is a grain elevator, grain terminal. It is the largest exporter of grain on the east coast of the United States. It has currently moved approximately 70 million bushels of grain per year out of this facility. And it is a great supporter of the agricultural industry of Virginia by moving those 70 million bushels of grain. How does it move those bushels? Well, routinely, it moves those bushels by loading Panamax vessels that come to its berth. And it has achieved the status of being the leader on the East Coast of grain shipment because it has a competitive advantage to the other ports on the East Coast and in the Gulf. Competitive advantage is that it has the shortest route to Europe and Africa and the Middle East, which are great grain importers, and it can load large ships, which is an economic advantage in this grain industry. Now, when Purdue started, actually it was Cargill in 1950, in the 1950s, the depth of water was 26 feet. Now the depth of water is 40 feet. When the Jordan Bridge was first constructed in 1928, it was a private enterprise that constructed that bridge. That bridge was constructed at a time when vessels were much smaller than they are today. And one day this summer, I looked out my window over Nauticus, and I saw the Liberty ship John W. Brown. And this is a vessel built in 1942. It's a museum ship now. But you look at that ship, and you realize how small that ship is compared to the ships that transit our river today. The vessel is about 441 feet long. It's about 50-foot beam. They hold about 10,000 deadweight ton of cargo. And you compare that to the vessels that are transiting our river today. And what comes to mind is Mr. Jordan, when he built the Jordan Bridge, had enough foresight to build a bridge that would allow those vessels to pass under his bridge. That was the vision he had in 1928, that in 1998 and 2008, vessels of this size could be moving up and down our river. Now, it wasn't a great vision because the Panama Canal allowed vessels of that size back in 1928. So he was understanding that whatever the limit of the canal is, that's going to be the limit of my bridge. This bridge that's being built today is not a bridge for today. It is not a bridge for 2015. It is not a bridge for 2020. This is a bridge that's going to last 80 or 100 years. This bridge will serve as the limit to this river for the next 80 years. The trade in this river will be limited by this bridge for the next 80 years or longer. That's the consequence we're bringing to you. Purdue does not object to the bridge. It objects to the dimensions of the bridge because Purdue knows that in the future, in order to be competitive, it may need to bring in the new vessels that are the standard. Not the Panamax vessels that it takes now, but the new Panamax, which will be the standard in 2020 or 2025. And it would just like to have the opportunity to compete in that marketplace on an equal basis with ports in Mississippi, in the Mississippi River, on the Gulf Coast. It just would like to have the opportunity to have that competition, and that competition will be severely restricted. And I'll make one last point, because I know there's been a lot of discussion about the other bridges in the river. The Norfolk Portsmouth Beltline Bridge, my understanding is that bridge was built in 1899, was renovated in 1950. That bridge is the only bridge between Purdue and the open ocean. 300-foot wide clearance on that bridge, built in 1899. That bridge is not going to last forever. That bridge is going to have to be replaced sometime in the next few years. At that point, the same issues will be raised for that bridge. But please understand, the Turning Basin, not a relevant issue for Purdue. The old bridge that's between it and the ocean will eventually be replaced. All we ask is that you consider the competitive situation that our waterfront facilities have on the Southern Branch. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you, sir. Who's next? How many are also going to be speaking in opposition? If you'd stand for me. Okay, that'll be fine. Thank you. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name, please.
My name is Patrick Hall. I'm with Kinder Morgan. I work out of the Elizabeth River Terminal in Chesapeake. Kinder Morgan Terminals owns and operates the Elizabeth River Terminal, located along the southern branch of the Elizabeth River in Chesapeake. At Elizabeth River Terminal, we handle a variety of high-volume bulk products, such as fertilizers, salt, scrap steel, and aggregates, all either loaded or discharged from ships. We provide and add enough full-time jobs to handle this business as we continue to experience annual business growth. To support this growth, Kinder Morgan invests some of its hard-earned capital in equipment, infrastructure, and buildings. The size of the ships that call upon the Elizabeth River Terminal has been increasing. That's why it's imperative that a replacement for the old Jordan Bridge be designed to accommodate the increasingly larger sized that are calling the Elizabeth River Terminal. The ports to our south, Charleston, Savannah, Brunswick, Georgia, all have recently placed older bridges with newly designed structures that offer wider horizontal clearances between 500 and 600 feet, coupled with much higher air drafts up to 185 feet, which facilitate waterborne commerce. Elizabeth River Terminals competes with these ports. Replacing the old Jordan Bridge with a new bridge that is relatively the same size as the old bridge structure will hamper Elizabeth River Terminal in its endeavor to grow and compete with these rival ports. I most respectfully ask the Virginia Marine Resources Commission to take into consideration the future growth potential of the southern branch of the Elizabeth River and do all within the Commission's power not to allow bridge design that could restrict our growth.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Just from a logistical matter, after this matter is heard, we're going to be breaking for lunch. So if you're here on another project, you may want to plan accordingly as far as your lunch is concerned. So just want to let you know that. Raise your right hand, solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name, please.
My name is Bob Wolf. I represent Hess Corporation. We are on the Elizabeth River Terminal. We are a Hess Petroleum Company. We throughput approximately 30 million gallons a month of petroleum products, which is resupplied via ship on the Elizabeth River. In order to access our terminal, we must pass under the proposed bridge. Hess is opposed to the proposed horizontal and vertical clearance of the bridge. It is our opinion that the clearance needs to be greater, and we suggest 150-foot vertical and 400-foot horizontal, so that it would better serve our future needs and the needs of the port. The clearance as proposed for the new bridge would limit the size of the vessels that can call at our terminal to those that we are using today. Hess is very much in favor of the bridge, just not of the vertical and horizontal clearance. We thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Who's next?
What time will you call the meeting back to order?
It'll be about 30 to 40 minutes after we get finished this hearing, so I can't tell you exactly what time. Thank you, sir. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. State your name, please.
My name is Captain Kevin Ely. I'm president of Independent Docking Pilots.
That's the
There we go.
It's okay.
And what I do is I pilot ships with tug assistance on the southern branch of the Elizabeth River to, you know, all the areas mentioned here today. I'm here to voice my opposition to the height and width limitations to the navigational channel of the proposed Jordan Bridge replacement. Limiting the navigational opening of the new bridge to the same dimensions of the former bridge built in the 1920s would be detrimental to both current and future navigational safety. The designers of the original Jordan Bridge showed great foresight when they built a bridge with navigational opening that far exceeded the requirements of the ship of their day. Surely they anticipated that economies of scale would continue to push ship sizes steadily upward. Even so, they would probably be shocked to see today's ships passing through the bridge with a vertical clearance less than the range of the tide and a width that leaves a maximum clearance per side of less than 25% of the ship's beam. On this note, I just want to mention that when the ships transit through the bridges, for the best control of the ship, you have a tug alongside the ship. So in addition to the numbers that you see of ship beam, you need to add 35 to 40 feet for the width of a tug that's alongside the ship. Transiting the existing Jordan Bridge provides several serious ship handling challenges. The location of the bridge on a bend in the channel requires the ship to be turning while transiting the bridge. Because of the wide arc of the swing of the stern, the swept path of the ship is wider during a turn than one traveling in a straight line. This is always taken into account in channel design by making the channel wider in bends than in straight sections. During a normal southbound transit, the alignment of the Beltline Bridge makes it necessary to first swing to the west towards the Naval Shipyard and so as to transit the Beltline close to perpendicular. This results in a greater course change when transiting the Jordan than might be apparent from a casual look at a chart. Instead of the desired increase of channel width, the Jordan Bridge turn, the channel narrows to the 220-foot width of the bridge. The bridge is not aligned perpendicularly to the channel. Simple geometry shows that this fact narrows the usable width of the opening to less than the 220-foot advertised width. The alignment of the bridge and the bend in the channel results in a set from the current towards the east fender system, especially with ebb current. During strong westerly winds, frequent during the winter months, they compound the problem by increasing the set to the east, particularly with a lightly loaded ship. In addition to all the ship handling challenges that the new bridge would share with the old bridge, the new bridge lengthens the fender system on the north-south axis. This will further complicate the transit by increasing the distance the ship must travel with the 225-foot width restriction. The widening of the Panama Canal will drastically change the size of ships calling on the east coast of the U.S. Since 1914, the size of the majority of world merchant fleet has been limited by the size restrictions of the canal. When the canal expansion is completed in 2014, the old Panamax size will be history. The new Panamax size, which is 1,200 feet of length overall, 160 feet of beam, and 50 feet draft, and 190 feet air draft, will result in much larger ships calling on East Coast ports. I am concerned that the proposed Jordan Bridge will so severely limit the size of ships calling on the southern branch of the Elizabeth River that it will negatively impact our business by making the terminals here less competitive than those in other ports without such severe bridge limitations. We believe the proposed Jordan Bridge replacement would negatively impact maritime business on the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. And most importantly, this proposed bridge would be detrimental to navigational safety and therefore pose an unnecessary risk to the maritime environment. A couple of small notes on things that have been said here earlier. The turning basin, you know, proposed turning basin mentioned up by Elizabeth River terminals, the maximum ship length that can be turned there is about 600 feet now because it was never widened. We currently can turn ships at Money Point, you know, about 850 feet long. And then looking at the width of the river in front of Hess terminals, the river itself is wide enough that you could do a turning basin that could accommodate 1,000-foot-long ships. If going to the Moffitt-Nichols study, if we looked at the beam, which they say that the channel can support, of 179 feet, if I take 179-foot-wide ship, put a 35-foot-wide tug on it, that gives me 5.5 feet of clearance on each side when I go through the proposed Jordan Bridge. That's it. Any questions?
Further questions?
I have a question.
Dr. McConaughey?
As a pilot, what's the deepest draft you would feel comfortable taking up the river with a channel of 45 feet?
Currently, we pretty much take a draft equal to the depth. So we go a high water approach and have the range of the tide as the undersea clearance. So that would give you, so with a 40-foot channel, it, assuming there's room at the terminal to handle the ship, then you could take a 40-foot draft ship in the 40-foot channel, you know, with a high water transit.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Who's next? Solomon, swear testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you God.
Yes, sir.
State your name, please.
My name is Grant Jackson. I represent the Association of Virginia Docking Pilots. I won't repeat what Captain Ealy said, but I will add to a couple of things in regards to the navigation. Just as everybody that's opposed, we're not opposed to a bridge. We're just opposed to the dimensions of this bridge. Captain Ealy stated that it will increase the navigation hazard for the length of the span with the extended fender system. Another major concern as far as safety is the old Jordan Bridge never had traffic transiting the span while we were navigating under it. Now there's not only risk to property for the ship and the bridge if damage is ensued, but if it's severe enough damage, there could be life at stake. Cars, pedestrians, bicycles can come off of that bridge. We would hope that nothing would be that severe, but looking at all the ramifications and possibilities, that's always on the table. As far as backing up what all of our customers have said, we service as pilots all the terminals that have spoken, Hess, Purdue, ERT, several others on that stretch of the river. You know, we certainly do not want to see their business impacted because it impacts our business. Dr. McConaughey, in response to your question, as of right now, you saw the chart that said the lower, middle, and upper reaches of the river. The lower reaches to the Purdue Oil Terminal or grain facility, that channel depth is 40 feet. We do take ships out of there at 40 feet currently. On the lower reach of the river, or the upper reach of the river, that chart of depth is 35 feet. We do transit that river at 35 feet. And we actually transit the Gilmerton Bridge at the 35 feet maximum charted depth, as you see. If there's any further questions?
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Right here. So I'm going to swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, sir.
State your name, please.
My name is Stephen Furlow. I'm Managing Director of Furlow Marine Management. I'm also Chairman of the Virginia Maritime Tug and Barge Operators Committee. I'm an Associate Member of the American Waterway Operators and a Board Member of the Atlantic and Coastal Waterway. I've been in the tug and barge business for 45 years supplying tug service from docking ships, bringing products to and from the ports of Hampton Roads. Ships quit coming in, the tug and barge business dries up. We bring the grain from the outlying farmers from Seaford, Virginia, Vienna, from all over, so it can be exported. It creates a service. Very economical, environmentally friendly transportation mode. We have a lot of ton miles at a relatively economic and environmentally friendly value. Products come in, fertilizer. We deliver fertilizer, bulk and liquid, to terminals all around the Chesapeake Bay and eastern North Carolina. If these ships can't get in and they go to other ports, the economic viability of the tug and barge industry would dwindle. We also supply the tugs that have the responsibility of guiding the ships through some of these bridges, which is a very difficult task, ensuring the public safety and getting the vessels to and from. Ships get bigger, that risk gets bigger. If the bridges are smaller or the constraints are such, it's more stress and strain put on the operators of these vessels. I think a bridge is needed, but it needs to accommodate both the maritime interests and the public interests. Hopefully we can find a meeting place.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else in opposition?
Coming. Hiding behind the gate here.
Sir, raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Right.
State your name, please.
My name is Ernest Ball. I was the original operator of Elizabeth River Terminals and founding chairman of the Norfolk Marine Terminal Association, which organization published the original port charges tariff for Hampton Roads. Subsequently, I spent 30 years as an international port planning and transportation consultant on projects funded by World Bank, USAID, Asian Development Bank, and UNDP. I'll leave you a copy of my credentials. You've heard a lot about the looking forward for the future of Hampton Roads, and it happens that, in my judgment, the southern branch is the only area, deep water area, remaining where we can have industrial port development. I believe the FIG bridge proposal will seriously hinder that development of as vessels grow larger and larger. It will be a long-term handicap, and everybody's talked to you about that. I came up with a solution to the dilemma, what to do about the bridge. It has 7 points, and I'll just briefly state those. 1, immediately remove all remnants of the old Jordan Bridge. 2, hold up the renovation of the Gilmerton Bridge. 3, move the proposed Jordan Bridge design to adjacent to the Gilmerton Bridge, then demolish the Gilmerton Bridge. 4, review and modify the Beltline rail connection so that all Beltline cross river traffic moves by way of the Norfolk Southern Bridge, just upstream from the Gilmerton Bridge. 5, reroute Norfolk Southern rail traffic currently using the Norfolk Southern Bridge at Paradise Creek so that it can cross the river via the Norfolk Southern Bridge adjacent to the Gilmerton Bridge. If this is not possible, then rebuild the Norfolk Southern Paradise Point Bridge to specifications suitable for deep draft vessels with drafts up to 45 feet, the depth needed for future international shipping. 5, introduce a transit toll fee similar to Panama Canal tolls and harbor dues to be assessed against all vessels using the southern branch of the Elizabeth River with drafts exceeding 30 feet. The funds from which toll will be held by the Virginia Port Authority or other appropriate state body for purposes of reimbursing the Corps of Engineers, the railroads, and the highway departments for capital expenditures related to the river program and for future maintenance. 7, proceed with the Corps of Engineers and Coast Guard efforts to fund the dredging to 45 feet. Undertake dredging in the first phase as far as Paradise Creek. Carry on the dredging to 45 feet the rest of the way to the Gilmerton Bridge as soon as the above listed projects have been approved and are being undertaken. Postpone dredging beyond the Gilmerton Bridge until adequate traffic to justify replacement further bridge crossing has been identified. I'll leave you a copy of my statement.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else? Ms. Figg, you have 5 minutes to rebut anything that may have been said in support of your application, and you remain under oath. Thank you, sir.
We would just like to give a little bit of this time to Secretary Homer with the Department of Transportation.
Good day, sir. You've been previously sworn, weren't you?
I was not intending to speak, so I've...
Solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Proceed, please.
Thank you. I wasn't intending to speak, but I did want to provide some summary comments. The Office of the Secretary of Transportation has oversight of the Port of Virginia, the Department of Highways, and a close relationship with the local governments. I was intending to come here to learn about some of the innovative techniques that you have to do. We have great faith in your permitting abilities, and I apologize, frankly, for a debate that's appropriate in front of the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard as part of their permitting responsibilities. I wanted to assure this body, as the individual and the entity that is responsible for balancing maritime activities and the Port of Virginia, whether it's Craney Island in the future, NIT, PMT, the APM, or the Newport News terminals, that we have taken those long-term issues into account. If this were a VDOT bridge, it would be built exactly like this, and we would be coming before you with these exact same conditions. And I just think it's important to keep all of that in perspective, and we are in support of the project.
Thank you. Any questions of Secretary Homer? Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am.
I also would like Philip Chiquette to say a few words.
Okay. Solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Philip A. Chiquette, Commissioner Bowman, and members of the commission. I just wanted to address one point regarding the opportunity to speak before public hearings. Yours is the seventh advertised public hearing for this project. Beginning in December of 2008, there was an advertised public hearing before Chesapeake City Council. There was a second advertised public hearing in January before Chesapeake Public City Council. There was an advertised public hearing in front of the Portsmouth City Council in January, another at the Chesapeake Planning Commission in February, and in July, one before the Chesapeake Wetlands Board, and another in August before the Portsmouth Wetlands Board. It would be abhorrent to me to be part of a transportation project that did not equally balance vehicular as well as maritime traffic. I agree with the Maritime Association that we should be forward-looking. I think the difference is we have been forward-looking. And as you heard Secretary Homer say, if this was a project being proposed by VDOT, which is required to look out a minimum of 30 to 50 years in advance for their planning, it would be precisely the same project that you see before you today. If the Corps of Engineers is fully funded to deepen the channel at 45, and that's if they were to be fully funded, and if they received all their local share of funding, the channel and the turning basin is the restriction to post-Panamax class ships at the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. None of the existing structures are, in fact. And I thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Chiquette? Thank you, sir. Thanks. Thank you both for very good presentations. The matter is before the commission for discussion. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask a follow-up question of Dems, if I could.
Lyle?
Mr. Robbins, Mr. Commissioner, Lyle Barnell, Dems. For this project, if I may, I think it would be best if I referred you to the Wetlands Program.
Dr. Hirschner?
Mr. Hirschner, here.
Mr. Hirschner.
Actually, Lyle, if I may, my question was going to be on impacts to fisheries resources rather than wetlands. And I just wanted to ask about some of the proposed mitigative measures.
I think Carl.
Would Carl like to?
I think they prepared that.
Okay, that's fine.
Reporting, if I may.
Okay. Carl, if I may, we've had some discussion earlier today about impacts to anadromous fish species that would be using the area, and I just wanted to get a sense. The recommendation that came from VIMS was to have a time of year restriction. We've also heard about other mitigative approaches, including the use of bubble curtains. And if those were in effect, would they need to be in effect outside of the time of year restriction that was proposed? In other words, are there any of your surveys indicate the presence of living fish resources in the area outside of the proposed time of year restrictions?
There are certainly fisheries resources in that reach beyond the February to June time. But as you know, that time of year is specifically focused on the anadromous resources, the fish that are transiting that area at that time of year.
So there are additional living resources in the area?
There are. Usually, the areas where bubble curtains have been used, it has usually been for fish in transit. As you heard from the consultant for the project, bubble curtains on the West Coast typically are used for salmon resource protection. Same thing in Canada. There is not a lot of hard scientific evidence about their efficacy or their use in this part of the country.
Okay, but to follow up, if I may,
Mr. Robbins,
in proposing a time of year restriction, your primary concern was with transiting anadromous fish.
That's correct. And we would like to make it very clear to you that the technical information that would lead us to recommend or not recommend use of bubble curtains is very, very limited. And so the recommendation for time of year is a precautionary approach on our part. And as the memo to your staff and to you indicates from us, there are a variety of options that we think are at your disposal for this particular project. And there is not sufficient evidence to say that one of them is absolutely preferable to the others. So we came to you with a precautionary recommendation.
Thank you. Further questions, Mr. Hirsch? Thank you, sir. Further comments?
I would move that we take staff recommendation. However, that we would limit the time restriction and require the all-boom silk curtain, concrete piles, and turbidity curtain in the bubble curtain.
Further comments? Mr. Lane, you had your hand up. Did you want to comment at this point?
Yes, I think the opponents of the I've made a strong case for a larger bridge. However, I'm struck by the fact that they are unable to persuade the Secretary of Commerce and members of Secretary of Transportation, I'm sorry, the members of the General Assembly, the City Councils of Portsmouth, Chesapeake, Chamber of Commerce. So really struck by the fact that all of those organizations and individuals are supporting this project. Only the future of commercial activity will determine whether or not a larger bridge should have been built. However, today, particularly due to the support of the city councils and the members of the General Assembly, it was due to support this project as presented.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think based on the testimony that we have heard today, there's very clearly a compelling public interest in this project. It's going to serve a very large public need in terms of accommodating transportation needs in the region, and consequently, I think those interests are compelling. We have two, I think, important issues. One relates to navigation, but I think the navigation issue is probably best considered in the broader context of the permitting process, and the Coast Guard is going to have the final say, I think, as I understand it, based on the staff assessment of the final dimensions of the bridge. And I'm inclined, as staff has recommended, to defer to the Coast Guard on that detail. I'd also note that local government has endorsed the plan as proposed, and that includes the dimensions and the required pedestrian walkway, et cetera. There are a lot of considerations that went into the planning process that were endorsed by local government. So I would be inclined on that issue to defer to the Coast Guard. And in addition, we do have evidence in the Moffitt-Nichols study that indicate that this is adequate to accommodate future maritime uses of the area. And in fact, not the bridge, but rather the dimensions of the river itself are going to be the limiting factors that would constrain vessel traffic in the area. On the other issue of fisheries impact, the National Marine Fisheries Service is required to consider EFH impacts and impacts to the managed species and their prey in the area related to this project. They've already done that. They've concluded that a time of year restriction is not warranted And as David O'Brien said, that the state certainly does have some additional expertise. We've heard from VIMS, and they have said that additional concerns are warranted. And I think that that does require some attention from this commission. And I think in that, on that specific issue, we can select from a range of choices. We have a continuum of risk preferences to consider, and I think we can make a risk-averse decision by requiring the use of the bubble curtains, as has been suggested, in lieu of a time-of-year restriction. I think a time-of-year restriction would be unnecessarily burdensome on the project, and I think we can accommodate impacts or mitigate impacts to fisheries resources in the area through the use of the bubble curtains. So I would be supportive of the motion that's been discussed.
Is that a second to Mr. Holland's motion?
If we could clarify that there would not be a time of year restriction, that's and that in lieu of that, that the use of bubble curtains would be required.
That was my motion.
Okay.
I'll second
the motion.
Further discussion? Well, I think this is a situation where certainly we have the opportunity, albeit a small part of an opportunity, to be part of the transportation solution. I think when you weigh the public benefits versus the detriments in this situation, the public benefits clearly outweigh what futuristically might be a private detriment. We don't really know for certain what's coming down the pipe. Now, history will prove whether we're correct or not as to what evolves, but at the present time, I think this is the right thing to do. We've got a situation where, as has been discussed by members of the legislature, transportation dollars are hard to come by. We've got an entity that's there that's going to come through and provide a very, very necessary traffic artery, and I think it's a good thing, and I support the motion. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries unanimously. We'll be in recess until about 12:40.